Chapter 11. An hour later, he was already in Petersburg, and soon after nine, he was ringing at Rogozhin's door. He went in at the visitor's entrance, and for a long time there was no answer. At last the door of the flat occupied by Rogozhin's mother was opened, and a trim-looking old servant appeared.
"Parfen Semyonovitch is not at home,"
she announced from the door.
"Whom do you want?"
"Parfen Semyonovitch."
"He's not at home."
The old servant looked at Mushkin with wild curiosity. "Tell me anyway, did he sleep at home last night? And did he come back alone yesterday?" The old woman went on looking at him, but made no reply. "Wasn't Nastasya Philipovna with him here last night?"
"But allow me to ask, who may you be pleased to be?"
"Prince Lyov Nikolaevich Mushkin. We are very intimate friends."
"He is not at home."
The woman dropped her eyes. "And Nastasya Philipovna?"
"I know nothing about that."
Stay, when is he coming back?"
"We know nothing of that either."
The door was closed. Mushkin determined to come back in an hour's time. Glancing into the yard, he saw the porter. "Is Parfen Semyonovitch at home?"
"Yes."
"How is it I was told just now that he was not at home?"
"Did his servant tell you that?"
"No, the servant at his mother's. I rang at Parfen Semyonovitch's, but there was no answer."
"Perhaps he's gone out," the porter commented. "You see, he doesn't say, and sometimes he takes the key away with him. The rooms are locked up for 3 days at a time."
"Do you know for a fact that he was at home yesterday?"
"Yes, it was. Sometimes he goes in at the front door, and one doesn't see him."
"And was Nastasya Philipovna with him yesterday?"
"That I can't say. She doesn't often come. I think we should know if she had been."
Mushkin went out and for some time walked up and down the pavement, lost in thought. The windows of the rooms occupied by Rogozhin were all closed. The windows of the part inhabited by his mother were almost all open. It was a hot, bright day. Mushkin crossed to the pavement on the other side of the street and stopped to look once more at the windows. They were not only closed, but almost everywhere hung with white curtains. He stood still a moment, and strange to say, it suddenly seemed to him that the corner of one curtain was lifted, and he caught a glimpse of Rogozhin's face, a momentary glimpse, and it vanished. He waited a little longer, and resolved to go back and ring again, but on second thought he put it off for 1 hour. And who knows, perhaps it was only my fancy. What decided him was that he was in haste to get to the Izmailovsky Polk, to the lodging Nastasya Philipovna had lately occupied. He knew that when, at his request, she had left Pavlovsk 3 weeks before, she had settled in the house of a friend of hers, the widow of a teacher, an estimable lady with a family, who let well-furnished rooms, and in fact almost made her living by doing so. It was highly probable that when Nastasya Philipovna moved for the second time to Pavlovsk, she had kept her lodging. It was very likely, in any case, that she had spent the night at those lodgings, where Rogozhin, of course, would have brought her that evening. Mushkin took a cab. On the way, it struck him that he ought to have begun by doing this, because it was unlikely she should have gone at night straight to Rogozhin's. He remembered the porter's words that Nastasya Philipovna did not often come. If she did not at any time come often, what would have induced her to stay at Rogozhin's now? Comforting himself with these reflections, Mushkin reached the lodgings at last, more dead than alive. To his great amazement, at the widow's, they had heard nothing of Nastasya Philipovna either that day or the day before, but they all ran out to stare at him, as at a wonder. The lady's numerous family, all girls of every age between 7 and 15, ran out after their mother and surrounded Mushkin, gaping. They were followed by a lean, yellow-faced aunt, and last of all the grandmother, a very aged lady in spectacles. The lady of the house earnestly begged him to go in and sit down, which Mushkin did. He saw at once that they knew quite well who he was, and that his wedding was to have taken place the day before, and that they were dying to ask about the wedding, and about the marvellous fact that he was inquiring of them for the woman who should have been at that moment with him at Pavlovsk, but had too much delicacy to ask. In brief outlines, he satisfied their curiosity about the wedding. Cries and exclamations of wonder and dismay followed, so that he was obliged to tell almost the whole story, in outline only, of course. Finally, the council of the sage and agitated ladies determined that the first thing certainly was to knock at Rogojin's till he got an answer, and to find out positively from him about everything. If he were not at home, and that he must ascertain for certain, or if he were unwilling to say, the prince should go to a German lady living with her mother at Semyonovsky Polk, who was a friend of Nastasia Philipovna's. Possibly Nastasia Philipovna, in her excitement and desire to conceal herself, might have passed the night with them. Mushkin got up, completely crushed. They said afterwards that he had turned fearfully pale. Indeed, his legs were almost giving way under him. At last, through the terrible shrill patter of their voices, he made out that they were arranging to act with him, and were asking for his address in town. He had no address, it appeared. They advised him to put up at some hotel. Mushkin thought a moment and gave the address of the hotel he had stayed at before, the one where he had had a fit 5 weeks before. Then he set off again to Rogojin's. This time he failed to get an answer, not only from Rogojin's, but even from his mother's flat. Mushkin went in search of the porter, and with some difficulty found him in the yard. The porter was busy and hardly answered him, hardly looked at him, in fact. Yet he asserted positively that Parfion Semyonovitch had gone out very early in the morning, had gone to Pavlovsk, and would not be home that day. "I will wait. Perhaps we will be back in the evening."
"But he mayn't be back for a week. There's no telling."
"So he had anyway been at home that night?"
"That he had, to be sure."
All this was suspicious, and there was something queer about it. It was quite possible that the porter might have received fresh instructions in the interval. He had been quite talkative the first time, but now he simply turned his back on him. But Mushkin made up his mind to come back once more, 2 hours later, and even to keep watch on the house if necessary. But now there was still hope in the German lady, and he drove off to Semyonovsky Polk. But at the German lady's, they did not even understand what he wanted. From some words they let slip, he was able to guess that the German beauty had quarrelled with Nastasia Philipovna about a fortnight before, so that she had heard nothing of her of late, and exerted herself to the utmost now to make him understand that she did not care to hear anything, if she had married all the princes in the world. Mushkin made haste to get away. It occurred to him, among other conjectures, that she might have gone to Moscow, as she had done before, and Rogojin, of course, had gone after her, or perhaps with her.
"If I can only find any traces!"
He remembered, however, that he must stop at a hotel, and he hurried to Liteyny, where he was at once given a room. The waiter asked him if he would not have something to eat. He answered absent-mindedly that he would. Then, realizing, was furious with himself at wasting half an hour over lunch, and only later on grasped the fact that he was not obliged to remain to eat the lunch that was served to him. A strange sensation gained possession of him in that dingy and stuffy corridor, a sensation that strove painfully to become a thought. But he still could not guess what that new struggling thought was. He went out of the hotel at last, hardly knowing what he was doing. His head was in a whirl. But where was he to go? He rushed off to Rogojin's again. Rogojin had not come back. There was no answer to his ring. He rang at old Madame Rogojin's. The door was opened, and he was told that Parfion Semyonovitch was not at home and might be away for 3 days. Mushkin was disconcerted at being looked at, as before, with such wild curiosity. This time he could not find the porter at all. He crossed over to the opposite pavement as before, gazed up at the windows and walked up and down in the stifling heat for half an hour, possibly more. This time nothing was stirring. The windows did not open. The white curtains were motionless. He made up his mind that he certainly had been mistaken before, that it was his fancy, that the windows, in fact, were so opaque and dirty that it would have been difficult to see, even if anyone had peeped out. Relieved by this reflection, he set off to the widow lady's at Ismailovsky Polk. There they were already expecting him. The lady herself had already been to 3 or 4 places, and had even been to Rogojin's. Nothing was to be seen or heard there. Mushkin listened in silence, went into the room, sat down on the sofa and gazed at them all, as though he did not understand what they were talking about. Strange to say, he was at one moment keenly observant, at the rest absent-minded to an incredible degree. All the family declared afterwards that he was an extraordinarily strange person that day, so that, perhaps even then, the end was clear. At last he got up and asked them to show him the rooms which had been Nastasia Philipovna's. They were two large, light, lofty rooms, very nicely furnished and let at a high rent. All the ladies described afterwards how Mushkin had scrutinized every object in the room, had seen on the table a French book from the library, Madame Bovary, lying opened, turned down the corner of the page at which the book was open, asked permission to take it with him, and not heeding the objection that it was a library book, put it in his pocket. He sat down at the open window, and seeing a card table marked with chalk, he asked who played. They told him that Nastasia Philipovna used to play every evening with Rogozhin at Fool's Preference, Miller's, Whist, Your Own Trumps, all sorts of games, and that they had only taken to playing cards lately, after she came back from Pavlovsk, because Nastasia Philipovna was always complaining that she was bored, that Rogozhin would sit silent all the evening and did not know how to say a word, and she would often cry. And suddenly, the next evening, Rogozhin had taken a pack of cards out of his pocket. Then Nastasia Philipovna had laughed, and they began playing. Mushkin asked where were the cards they used to play with, but the cards were not forthcoming. Rogozhin used to bring a new pack every day in his pocket, and took it away again with him. The ladies advised him to go once more to Rogozhin's, and to knock loudly once more, and to go not at once but in the evening. Perhaps something will turn up. The widow herself offered meanwhile to go to Pavlovsk, to Darya Alexeyevna's, to find out whether anything was known of her there. They asked Mushkin to come again in any case at 10 o'clock that evening, that they might agree on the plans for the next day. In spite of all their attempts to comfort and reassure him, Mushkin's soul was overwhelmed with absolute despair. In unutterable dejection, he walked to his hotel. The dusty, stifling atmosphere of Petersburg weighed on him like a press. He was jostled by morose or drunken people, stared aimlessly at the faces, and perhaps walked much farther than he need have done. It was almost evening when he went into his room. He decided to rest a little, and then to go to Rogozhin's again, as he had been advised. He sat down on the sofa, leaned his elbows on the table, and sank into thought. God knows how long and of what he thought. There were many things he dreaded, and he felt painfully, agonizingly, that he was in terrible dread. Vera Lebedev came into his mind. Then the thought struck him that Lebedev perhaps knew something about it, or if he did not, might find out more quickly and easily than he could. Then he remembered Ippolit, and that Rogozhin used to visit Ippolit. Then he thought of Rogozhin, as he was lately at the funeral, then in the park, then suddenly, as he was here in the corridor, when he hid and waited for him with a knife. He recalled his eyes now, his eyes as they looked at him there in the darkness. He shuddered. That thought which had been striving for expression suddenly came into his head. He thought that if Rogozhin were in Petersburg, even though he were hiding for a time, he would certainly end by coming to him, Mushkin, with good or with evil intention, as he had done then. Anyway, if Rogozhin did want to see him, there would be nowhere else for him to come but here, to this corridor. He did not know his address, so he might very well suppose that Mushkin would go to the same hotel as before. Anyway, he would try looking for him here, if he had great need of him. And who knows? Perhaps he had great need of him. So he mused, and the idea seemed to him for some reason quite possible. He could not have explained, if he had probed his own thought, why he should be suddenly so necessary to Rogozhin, and why it was so impossible that they should not meet. But the thought was an oppressive one. "If he is all right, he will not come," Mushkin went on thinking. "He is more likely to come if he is unhappy, and he is certain to be unhappy." Of course, with that conviction, he ought to have remained at home in his room, waiting for Rogozhin. But he seemed unable to remain with this new idea. He snatched up his hat and went out hurriedly. It was almost dark in the corridor by now. "What if he suddenly comes out of that corner and stops me at the stairs?" flashed through his mind as he reached the same spot. But no one came out. He passed out at the gate, went out into the street, wondered at the dense crowd of people who had flocked into the streets at sunset, as they always do in Petersburg in summertime, and turned in the direction of Gorohovy. 50 paces from the hotel, at the first crossing, someone in the crowd suddenly touched his elbow, and in an undertone said in his ear,
"Lyov Nikolaevich, follow me, brother, I want you." It was Rogozhin.
Strange to say, Mushkin began telling him joyfully, gabbling at a great rate and hardly articulating the words, how he had just expected to see him at the hotel in the corridor.
"I've been there," Rogozhin unexpectedly answered. "Come along."
Mushkin was surprised at his answer, but did not wonder till 2 minutes later, at least, when he realized it. When he reflected on the answer, he was alarmed, and began to look intently at Rogozhin, who was walking almost half a step in front of him, looking straight before him, not glancing at anyone they passed, making way for other people with mechanical care.
"Why didn't you ask for me at my room?" "If you have been at the hotel," asked Mushkin suddenly.
Rogozhin stopped, looked at him, thought a little, and as though he did not take in the question, said,
"I say, Lyov Nikolaevich, you go straight along here to the house, you know, but I'll walk on the other side, and mind that we keep together."
Saying this, he crossed the road to the opposite pavement, stood still to see whether Mushkin were walking on, and seeing that he was standing still, gazing at him open-eyed, motioned him towards Gorohovy, and walked on, turning every moment to look at Mushkin and sign him to follow. He was evidently reassured by Mushkin's understanding him, and followed him on the other side of the pavement. It occurred to Mushkin that Rogozhin wanted to keep a lookout, and not let someone pass him on the way, and that therefore he had crossed to the other side.
Only why didn't he say whom he has to look out for?
So they walked for 500 paces, and all at once, for some reason, Mushkin began trembling. Rogozhin still kept looking back at him, though not so often. Mushkin could not stand it, and beckoned to him. Rogozhin at once crossed the road to him.
"Is Nastasya Philipovna in your house?"
"Yes."
"And was it you looked at me behind the curtain this morning?"
"Yes."
How was it you?"
But Mushkin did not know what more to ask, or how to finish his question. Moreover, his heart was throbbing so violently that he could scarcely speak. Rogozhin, too, was silent, and he still gazed at him as before, that is, as it were, dreamily.
"Well, I am going," he said suddenly, preparing to cross the road again. "And you go by yourself. Let us go separately in the street. That's better for us. On different sides. You will see."
When at last they turned, on opposite sides of the road, into Gorohovy, and began to approach Rogozhin's house, Mushkin's legs began to give way under him again, so that it was almost difficult for him to walk. It was about 10 o'clock in the evening. The windows in the old lady's part of the house were still open as before. In Rogozhin's they were all closed, and in the twilight the white curtains over them seemed still more conspicuous. Mushkin approached the house from the other side of the pavement. Rogozhin, from his side of the pavement, went straight up the steps and beckoned to him. Mushkin crossed over and joined him.
"The porter doesn't know that I've come home now. I said this morning that I was going to Pavlovsk, and I left word at my mother's too," he whispered, with a sly and almost pleased smile. "We'll go in, and no one will hear."
The key was already in his hand. As he went up the staircase, he turned round and shook his finger at Mushkin to warn him to go up quietly. Quietly he opened the door of his rooms, let Mushkin in, followed him in cautiously, closed the door behind him, and put the key in his pocket.
"Come along,"
he articulated in a whisper. He had not spoken above a whisper since they were in Liteyny. In spite of all his outward composure, he was inwardly in a state of intense agitation. When they went into the drawing-room on their way to the study, he went to the window and mysteriously beckoned to Mushkin.
"When you began ringing here this morning, I guessed at once that it was you. I went on tiptoe to the door and heard you talking to Pafnutyevna, and I gave her orders as soon as it was daylight that if you or anyone from you or anyone whatever began knocking at my door, she wasn't to say I was here on any account, especially if you yourself came for me, and I gave her your name. And afterwards, when you went out, the thought struck me, what if he stands and keeps a lookout and watches in the street? I went up to this very window, drew aside the curtain, and there you were, standing, looking straight at me. That's how it happened.
Where is Nastasya Philipovna?
Mushkin articulated breathlessly.
She is here.
Rogozhin brought out slowly, after a moment's delay.
Where?
Rogozhin raised his eyes and looked intently at Mushkin.
Come along.
He still talked in a whisper, and not hurriedly, but deliberately, and still with the strange dreaminess. Even when he told him about the curtain, he seemed to mean something quite different by his words, in spite of the spontaneousness with which he spoke. They went into the study. There was some change in the room since Mushkin had been in it last. A heavy green silk curtain that could be drawn at either end hung right across the room, dividing the alcove where Rogozhin's bed stood from the rest of the apartment. The heavy curtain was closely drawn at both ends. It was very dark in the room. The white nights of the Petersburg summer were beginning to get darker, and had it not been for the full moon, it would have been difficult to make out anything in Rogozhin's dark rooms with the windows curtained. It is true they could still see each other's faces, though very indistinctly. Rogozhin's face was pale, as usual. His glittering eyes watched Mushkin intently with a fixed stare.
"You'd better light a candle," said Mushkin.
"No. No need," answered Rogozhin.
And taking Mushkin's hand, he made him sit down on a chair. He sat opposite, moving his chair up so that he almost touched Mushkin with his knees. Between them, a little to one side, stood a small round table.
"Sit down. Let's stay here a bit," he said, as though persuading Mushkin to stay. "I seem to know that you would be staying at that hotel again," he began,
as people sometimes approach an important subject by beginning about quite irrelevant trifles.
"As soon as I got into the corridor, I thought, what if he is sitting waiting for me, just as I am for him at this very moment? Have you been to the teacher's widow?"
"Yes." Mushkin was hardly able to articulate from the violent throbbing of his heart.
"I thought of that, too. There'll be talk," I thought. "And then I thought again, I'll bring him here for the night, so that we may spend this night together."
"Rogozhin, where is Nastasya Philipovna?"
Mushkin whispered suddenly, and he stood up trembling in every limb. Rogozhin got up, too.
"There," he whispered, nodding towards the curtain.
"Sleep," whispered Mushkin.
Again Rogozhin looked at him, intently as before.
"Well, come along, then. Only you. Well, come along."
He lifted the curtain, stood still, and turned to Mushkin again.
"Come in,"
he nodded, motioning him to go within the curtain. Mushkin went in.
"It's dark here," he said.
"One can see," muttered Rogozhin.
"I can scarcely see. And there's a bed."
"Go nearer,"
Rogozhin suggested softly. Mushkin took a step nearer, then a second, and stood still. He stood still and looked for a minute or two. Neither of them uttered a word all the while they stood by the bedside. Mushkin's heart beat so violently that it seemed as though it were audible in the death-like stillness of the room. But his eyes were by now accustomed to the darkness, so that he could make out the whole bed. Someone lay asleep on it, in a perfectly motionless sleep. Not the faintest stir, not the faintest breath could be heard. The sleeper was covered over from head to foot with a white sheet, and the limbs were vaguely defined. All that could be seen was that a human figure lay there, stretched at full length. All around, in disorder at the foot of the bed, on chairs beside it, and even on the floor, clothes had been flung in disorder. A rich white silk dress, flowers and ribbons. On a little table at the head of the bed, there was the glitter of diamonds that had been taken off and thrown down. At the end of the bed there was a crumpled heap of lace, and on the white lace the toes of a bare foot peeped out from under the sheet. It seemed as though it had been carved out of marble, and it was horridly still. Mushkin looked, and felt that as he looked, the room became more and more still and deathlike. Suddenly there was a buzz of a fly which flew over the bed and settled on the pillow. Mushkin started.
"Let's go."
Rogozhin touched his arm. They went out and sat down on the same chairs, facing one another again. Mushkin trembled more and more violently, and never took his questioning eyes off Rogojin's face.
"I notice you are trembling, Lyov Nikolaevich," Rogojin said at last. "Almost as much as you did when you had your illness. Do you remember, in Moscow, or as you had once before a fit? I can't think what I should do with you now."
Mushkin listened, straining every effort to understand, and still his eyes questioned him.
"Was it you?"
he brought out at last, nodding towards the curtain.
"It was I," Rogojin whispered, and he looked down.
They were silent for 5 minutes.
"For if," Rogojin began, continuing suddenly as though his speech had not been interrupted, "you are ill, have your fit and scream, someone may hear from the street or the yard and guess that there are people in the flat. They'll begin knocking and come in, for they all think I'm not at home. I haven't lighted a candle, for fear they should guess from the street or the yard. For when I am away, I take the key, and no one ever comes in to tidy the place for 3 or 4 days in my absence. That's my habit. So I took care they shouldn't find out we are here."
"Stay," said Mushkin. "I asked the porter and the old woman this morning whether Nastasya Philipovna hadn't stayed the night here, so they must know already."
"I know that you asked them. I told Pafnudyevna that Nastasya Philipovna came here yesterday and went away to Pavlovsk, and that she was only here 10 minutes, and they don't know she stayed the night here. No one knows it. I came in with her yesterday quite secretly, as we did just now. I've been thinking on the way that she wouldn't care to come in secretly, but not a bit of it. She whispered, she walked on tiptoe, she drew her skirts round her and held them in her hand that they might not rustle. She shook her finger at me on the stairs. It was you she was afraid of. She was mad with terror in the train, and it was her own wish to stay the night here. I thought of taking her to her lodgings at the widow's, but not a bit of it. 'He'll find me there as soon as it's daylight,' she said. 'But you will hide me, and early tomorrow morning we'll set off for Moscow.' And then she wanted to go somewhere to Orel. And as she went to bed, she kept saying we'd go to Orel."
"Stay. What are you going to do now, Parfen? What do you want to do?"
"I wonder about you. You keep trembling. We'll stay the night here together. There is no bed but that one, and I thought we might take the pillows off the two sofas and make up a bed here for you and me beside the curtain, so that we can be together. For if they come in and begin looking round or searching, they'll see her at once and take her away. They'll begin questioning me. I shall say it was me, and they'll take me away at once. So let her lie here, now, beside us. Beside you and me."
"Yes. Yes,"
Mushkin agreed warmly.
"So we won't confess and let them take her away?"
"Not on any account," Mushkin decided. "Certainly not."
"And that's what I decided, lad. Not to give her up on any account to anyone. We'll keep quiet all night. I only went out for an hour this morning. Except for that, I've been with her all the time. And then I went to find you in the evening. Another thing I'm afraid of is that it's so hot, and there may be a smell. Do you notice a smell?"
"Perhaps I do. I don't know. But certainly will be by the morning."
"I covered her with American leather, good American leather, and put the sheet over it. Then I put 4 jars of Zhdanov's disinfectant there, uncorked. They're standing there now."
"Just as they did that time at Moscow."
"On account of the smell, brother. And you see how she is lying. You must look in the morning when it's light. What's the matter? Can't you stand up?"
Rogojin asked with apprehensive wonder, seeing that Mushkin was trembling so much that he could not get up.
"My legs won't move," muttered Mushkin. "It's from terror, I know. When the fear is over, I shall get up."
"Stay, I'll make up our bed, and you better lie down. And I'll lie down too. And we'll listen. For I don't know yet, lad.
for I don't understand it all yet. I warn you of that beforehand, so that you may know all about it beforehand."
Muttering these unintelligible words, Rogojin began making up the beds. It was evident that he had thought of these beds, possibly even that morning. The previous night he had lain on the sofa, but there was not room for two on the sofa, and he was set on there sleeping side by side. That was why, with much effort, he now dragged, right across the room, the various cushions off the two sofas and laid them by the curtain. He made the bed after a fashion. He went up to Mushkin, tenderly and eagerly took him by the arm, raised him, and led him to the bed. But Mushkin found he could walk by himself, so his terror was passing off, and yet he still was trembling.
"Because," Rogojin began, making Mushkin lie down on the left on the best cushions, while, without undressing, he stretched himself out on the right, clasping his hands behind his head. "Because it's hot, brother, and you know there may be a smell. I'm afraid to open the windows. My mother has got jars of flowers, heaps of flowers, and they have such a delicious smell. I thought of bringing them in, but Pafnutyevna would have been suspicious. She's inquisitive."
"She is inquisitive," Mushkin assented.
"Shall we buy nosegays and put flowers all round her? But I think, friend, it will make us sad to see her with flowers round her."
"Listen," said Mushkin uncertainly, as though he were looking for what he meant to ask and at once forgetting it again. "Listen. Tell me, what did you do it with? A knife? The same one?"
"The same one."
"There's something else. I want to ask you something else, Parfian. I want to ask you a great many questions, all about it, but you'd better tell me first to begin with, so that I may know. Did you mean to kill her before my wedding at the church door? With a knife?"
"I don't know whether I meant to or not,"
Rogojin answered dryly, seeming somewhat surprised at the question and not understanding it.
"Did you ever take the knife with you to Pavlovsk?"
"No, never. All I can tell you about the knife is this, Lyov Nikolaevich," he added after a pause. "I took it out of a locked drawer this morning, for it all happened this morning, about 4 o'clock. It had been lying in a book all the time. And another thing seems strange. The knife went in 3 or 4 inches, just under the left breast, and there wasn't more than half a tablespoonful of blood flowed onto her chemise. There was no more."
That... Mushkin sat up suddenly in great agitation. "That, I know. I've read about it. That's called internal bleeding. Sometimes there's not one drop. That's when the stab goes straight to the heart."
"Stay. Do you hear?"
Rogojin interrupted quickly, all of a sudden sitting up in terror on the cushions.
"Do you hear?"
"No,"
answered Mushkin, as quickly and fearfully looking at Rogojin.
"Steps. Do you hear? In the drawing room."
They both began listening.
"I hear,"
said Mushkin decidedly.
"Footsteps.
Footsteps.
Should we shut the door or not?"
"Shut it."
They shut the door and both lay down again. They were silent for a long time.
"Ah, yes,"
Mushkin began suddenly, in the same excited and hurried whisper, as though he had caught his thought and were dreadfully afraid of losing it again. He sat up on the bed.
"It's... I wanted those cards. Cards. They said you played cards with her..."
"Yes, I did,"
said Rogojin after a brief silence.
"Where are the cards?"
"They are here,"
Rogojin brought out after a long silence.
"Here."
He brought a pack of cards wrapped up in paper out of his pocket and held them out to Mushkin. He took it, but with a sort of wonder. A new feeling of hopeless sadness weighed on his heart. He realized suddenly that at that moment, and a long time past, he had been saying not what he was wanting to say, and had been doing the wrong thing, and that the cards he was holding in his hands, and was so pleased to see, were no help. No help now. He stood up and clasped his hand. Rogojin lay without movement and seemed not to hear and see his action, but his eyes glittered in the darkness and were wide open and staring fixedly. Mushkin sat down on a chair and began looking at him with terror. Half an hour passed. Suddenly Rogojin cried out aloud and began laughing, as though he'd forgotten they must speak in a whisper.
"That officer, that officer. Do you remember how she switched that officer at the bandstand? And there was a cadet, too, who rushed up."
Mushkin jumped up from the chair in new terror. When Rogojin was quiet, and he suddenly ceased, Mushkin bent softly over him. Sat beside him, and with his heart beating violently and his breath coming in gasps, he began looking at him. Rogojin did not turn his head towards him, and seemed indeed to have forgotten him. Mushkin looked and waited. Time was passing. It began to get light. From time to time, Rogojin began suddenly and incoherently muttering in a loud, harsh voice. He began shouting and laughing. Then Mushkin stretched out his trembling hand to him and softly touched his head, his hair, stroking them and stroking his cheeks. He could do nothing else. He began trembling again, and again his legs seemed suddenly to fail him. Quite a new sensation gnawed at his heart with infinite anguish. Meanwhile, it had become quite light. At last he lay down on the pillow, as though utterly helpless and despairing, and put his face close to the pale and motionless face of Rogojin. Tears flowed from his eyes onto Rogojin's cheeks, but perhaps he did not notice then his own tears, and was quite unaware of them. Anyway, when, after many hours, the doors were opened and people came in, they found the murderer completely unconscious and raving. Mushkin was sitting beside him, motionless on the floor, and every time the delirious man broke into screaming or babble, he hastened to pass his trembling hand softly over his hair and cheeks, as though caressing and soothing him. But by now he could understand no questions he was asked, and did not recognize the people surrounding him. And if Schneider himself had come from Switzerland to look at his former pupil and patient, remembering the condition in which Mushkin had sometimes been during the first year of his stay in Switzerland, he would have flung up his hands in despair, and would have said, as he did then,
"An idiot!